Greetings and welcome to Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. This is a weekly podcast of Sunday homilies and theological reflections given by the staff of the Catholic community and their guests. Today's speaker is Father Bob Glynn, S.J., parochial vicar of the Catholic community. It is the Easter Sunday and the readings are from Cycle C.
Just the other day, I was sitting in my office on the third floor of Old Union here at Stanford. It's not precisely true because I don't have an office. But I had co-opted the office from someone else and was pretending it was mine, so I looked kind of important. And, you know, I was pretending to work hard, and then someone finally came by and said, "Oh, can I talk with you for a few minutes, Father?" And I thought, yes, this is good. It looks like I earned my pay if they do that. So in she came, and she's sitting and said, "Father, you know, you have had a very interesting life." And it sort of came like a news flash to me, I have to say, because I don't think it's been all that exciting. You know, I mean, I grew up in Alameda, the Isle of Style in the East Bay. Not exciting. I'm a priest, believe it or not. Not exciting. You know, I've done all my studies and things like that. Not exciting. And I've been a school teacher most of my life. Definitely not exciting. And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she said, "Well, you always have such good stories." And I thought, I thought, it's not I'm the one who's lived an interesting life. I just meet interesting people who tell me about their lives, and then I share them with everyone else. I said, that's the highlight of interest for me. And it was occurring to me as Easter was coming, I was thinking of someone I saw for the first time in 20 years. I saw him a few months ago at my niece's graduation in Arizona. And he was a lovely boy. I had taught him in high school in Phoenix. And he was very, very bright. And he sat in the back of the class and was generally nice and quiet until every so often, if I said something that he didn't like, he would ask some pointed question. Fortunately, no one else in the class was as bright as he was. So I would give an answer that I made up on the spot. Everyone else nodded and looked like they understood something, and he would just smile. But we got along very well. And so after all, he went on to Yale. And from that high school, even though there were many, many bright young men, it was an all-boys school, there were very many bright young men. He was one of the brightest I ever taught. And so several years, he went to Yale, I went somewhere, I don't remember where that was, and then he went to the Art Institute of Chicago for a Master of Fine Arts. Now, this is Stanford, so we say that proudly. The Art Institute of Chicago is the Stanford of Art Institutes. Now, I'm making that up because I'm not sure, but it sounds very good, and you should look impressed, right? So we met after he finished, and I hadn't seen him in really, I think, 8 years. And so he said, "Father, I've brought my art portfolio with me. Would you like to see it?" Now, in my head, I said, "Not on your life. I do not want to see an art portfolio." Because my picture was abstract art that I would have to pretend to understand and like. And I thought, I'm not so good at that, you know, oohing and aahing over black and blue squares. So I thought about it, and then, of course, I said, "Yes, I would love to see the portfolio." Fathers can lie at moments like this, too. So out comes a massive portfolio. I thought, oh, God, what have I gotten myself into? But the interesting thing was that, fortunately, it was not abstract art. He did what they call... Now, I said it right at the 10:30 Mass. It's where you put things in a place. Installation art. Yeah. So, basically what he did was he created kind of interesting things, and then they were installed for a while, and then they have to get taken down. He took pictures of them and stuff. So I was looking at the pictures. And I would say many of them were quite interesting. But three of them particularly caught my imagination, and they're the three that are your homily for today. So pay careful attention, okay, as I try to describe, because I have no artistic bone in my body. So I'm looking through these, and I said, oh, this is an interesting one. I don't know if any of you here are from Chicago, but I did my master's studies in Chicago, and I thought, I saw the place, and I thought, why did he ever go here to do an installation? Those of you from Chicago will know the meatpacking plants. They're a lovely neighborhood. Yeah. And so I looked at the picture, and I recognized the meat plants, and then all around were all of these things that look like birdhouses. And I said, I knew the meatpacking plant wasn't the installation. I was smart enough on that. So I said, why are there birdhouses? I said, is that the installation? He said, that's the installation. I said, but there are no trees near the meatpacking plant. Where are you going to find birds? And he said, they're not for birds. Okay, so I had to ask. I said, well, what are they for? And he said, well, they're houses for rats, of course. I go, oh, God, help us. He's building houses for rats. I said, well, why did you build houses for rats? And he said, because nobody else would. You know, and rats need places to stay, too. I mean, nobody likes rats, whoever takes care of them. You'd get a bad reputation, too, if you were like that. I thought, oh, okay. The next one was less terrifying. So I have a picture, and he taught, God only knows what he must have taught them, but he volunteered taught art at a middle school in Chicago. And so we look at this picture, and it's dead middle of winter. Those of you from the Midwest, you know, cold, ice, wind, snow, no leaves, trees look dead. And so he has a picture of the school with all these dead trees. I mean, they look dead, okay. I know they're not dead, but in front of the school. And I said, oh, gosh, this is a fantastic installation. I had no idea. No idea. Okay. And he said, that's not the page that has the installation on it. I said, oh, of course, of course. So he said, it's the next page, but you have to see this page first. And I looked at the next page. Same day, in utter amazement. Because what he had done, and was he had made thousands of pieces of hard candy in the shape of leaves that were red and yellow and green and gold. And with molasses, he had painstakingly glued all of these leaves to all the bare trees in the schoolyard. And so the children came out on this freezing winter day in Chicago, and they see trees brimming with leaves. A minor miracle. But even better, they were made of candy, and they ate them all. I thought, well, I like that one. Now, the third one I have to read, because the third one involves science. And I know I have a bad audience if I make a mistake here, all right? I could get away with the other two, but this one, no. Okay, so I contacted him because I couldn't remember how the third one went. He was delighted that I remembered any of it. I was kind of too. But he said, the piece with the light, the third one, was called Device to Alter the Orbit of the Earth. And it did just that. Since light acts as if it has mass, so a light shining straight upwards essentially acts like a tiny rocket on the side of the Earth. My friend was getting his PhD in physics at the time, and he helped me model it. This piece, if it was left on for a billion years, would elongate the orbit of the Earth by about a meter. They didn't make it through one night, so it didn't do that for a billion years. But I thought about these three things, these three odd art pieces, the installation art, and I realized, you know, in many ways, oddly enough, they summarize the Paschal mystery for us. First of all, who else would build houses for creatures who were so awful and evil? Who would give them a home and look after them, even while they tried to destroy everything around them? Who would make this theirs for perpetuity? And then, out of dead wood, in the middle of freezing winter, with the dark and the loss of light, miraculous food, born on dead wood, giving joy and life and pleasure and delight and a sense of something that will never be forgotten, that surely you could never see a tree covered with candy leaves and ever have it leave your memory. And thirdly, the most important one. We as Christians often look at the world the way that everybody does. Jesus of Nazareth came, he lived, he did miracles, he died, he rose from the dead, and the world is as awful a place today as it was when he walked the earth. To me, this bespeaks an arrogance that is beyond imagining. How do we know? How do we look into the hearts of others? How can we tell? Because for 2,000 years, a light has been shining up directly from this world, the light that never dies, into a darkness in which it permeates. And with it, it has altered and continues to alter the orbit of human life, to change what we don't see, to take what is impossible and make it real. And that light is joined by the light that he calls to us to be. As his grace flows through us, we shine those lights as well. Last night, in this same church, more lights were brought. More baptisms, more entrance into the faith, more of those who would share in the bread of life. And today, in 28 seconds, we will bring yet another light. Because, surprise, we're having a baptism too. Right here at this Mass, so you will see one additional fragment of light, a miracle before your very eyes.
This has been a presentation of Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. Director Gary Glauber, with music by Albert Tommaso and Shane Clarkson. For more information, please visit our website at web.stanfordcatholic.org or visit our offices on the third floor of Old Union. Till next time, God bless you.